If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny. Greetings in the effulgent light of the One Supreme Whole. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Discontent, a doorway to the divine. So let's take a deep breath and align yourself and call yourself into your full presence here and now. Quietly connecting your radiant formlessness as being awareness and bliss, and wedding it through the nervous system of your physical vehicles of expression. You are not in your body, but your soul is operating through a human nervous system. That's all. Kind of like your body is a puppet. The nervous system is like a series of strings. But what is really instigating the action is you, as pure spirit, as pure sentient, eternal existence, as pure unalloyed bliss. The bliss of being, of presence, of all pervasiveness. And it is that each one of us ever seeks to return to. And anything less than that gives rise to discontent, which, if you look at it carefully, is perfectly obvious that it's letting you know that whatever is causing discontent is not real. It is subject to impermanence and change. For everything that gives rise to any form of negativity or discontent, if you look at it carefully, you will see that it is impermanent. It does not have sustainability. It is one of the things that is going and coming and passing and waxing and waning, as all things do in the lower dimensions. Excuse me, I'm going to have to clear my throat. That happens when I'm clearing people's understanding and their ability to speak their truth. So bear with me. We have to be able to speak from our heart, and that requires a coherency between the spoken word and the intention of the heart, the truth of the heart. And when love and truth join within you, you have that coherency. And that's what we're working for, so that everything comes from the truth of our core essence. It's not dimmed down or compromised to please the world, or the god of opinion, which prevails in the world. So, I think it would be appropriate tonight, because this is the Wesak, or the Vaisakha full moon, which is the full moon of May, which honors two of the greatest avatars to visit our planet. The Lord Buddha, who was the embodiment of divine wisdom, or jnana, and the Christ, honored as the embodiment of divine love, or prema. And what many people in the West do not understand is that the Buddha and Christ are both embodiments of the one same divine impulse to bring illumination. One brought illumination, in the case of the Buddha we're speaking of here, and his message was to show that it is attachment to the impermanent states and forms in this world of constant change and constant impermanence that is the root cause of all suffering. It's attachment to the impermanent. And the Buddha taught that when we discriminate between that which is permanent and that which is impermanent, we can learn to practice detachment from the passing and impermanent states and forms inherent in this world. And Buddha learned this through his own direct practice, that the middle path of moderation in one's habits, rather than strict asceticism or free indulgence, that it was the middle path that was the path that we should adopt, practicing this discernment and discrimination as we move through life. So practice looking at those times when you feel discontent and ask yourself, am I attached here? What am I trying to resist? Because if you realize that whatever it is you're attached to is only for a time and a season, everything, I don't care what it is, a relationship, a house, a possession, a state of consciousness, a place, an environment, whatever it is, it is going to change. It is going to move from your life. Even your body, don't be attached to your body, your personality, your job, the labels that have been placed over you. Walk in that sense of discerning always, that your reality is eternality. You're not in this time. You're only identified temporarily with this time episode or this time capsule in which you call your current embodiment. So that was the essence of the teaching of the Buddha, who has been known as the Awakened One or the Enlightened One. Jesus taught the perfect way to God through love, through selfless self-giving, through service. And he and the Supreme Absolute merged into one to the point to where he could say, I of myself do nothing. It is the Father himself who does all things through me. And when you've seen me, you have seen the Father. The Father and I are one. So these are the things to bear in mind at the Wesak Festival, which is an actual celebration. Actually, it takes place in a ravine, a sacred ravine in India, in the Himalayas, where people, all the villagers, know about it. And physically, they will make a pilgrimage to this area to celebrate Buddha Purnima, or the day or the night of the Buddha. And at that time, the Lord Buddha, who is now, according to the masters, a resident on the sun star of Sirius, he will bring his body and position it in the etheric field, which people can see clairvoyantly, over that of the Christ, who is standing in the physical, and the two together join in sending the radiation of the resurrection frequencies into humanity for its ascension and its transfiguration. All disciples, all initiates of the masters are present for the Wesak, always. They go in their subtle bodies. Because we are a day behind India, that meant yesterday or the evening before, those of you in the West were actually at the Vaisakha Festival, or the Wesak as it's called. We used to celebrate, I guess it's still being celebrated in Mount Shasta, an annual Wesak Festival. In fact, I was one of the keynote speakers for, I guess, about 5 years from 95 to 1999. And that was like a modern-day amalgamation of all the teachings that many light workers are involved with, And we had different speakers that would speak and share. And it was a wonderful celebration. It kind of modernized it. My dear friend, Dr. Joshua David Stone, really advanced the whole idea of the bicycle or the WESOC Festival to an event that everybody could participate in and relate to. And it took it out of the realm of the esoteric and brought it before humanity. And the whole reason of the festivals that are celebrated, such as the Festival of Easter, the Festival of the May Full Moon, or the Full Moon of Buddha, and the Festival of Humanity in June, the purpose of these three major festivals is to bring in the new energy and anchor it into humanity. And this is the highlight, you would say, of the spiritual year in terms of the outpouring of the spiritual benefactors of humanity to humanity. And each time we go up a gradient in the light field. So that's the purpose of the Vaisakha or the WESOC Festival. And I think probably now it would be appropriate for us to take another deep breath and bring yourself forward. And focus very gently behind your third eye without any kind of forcing. Just close your eyes and look out at the back of your head through your forehead. And together we're going to say the great invocation. This is the prayer or the mantra, the great mantra that is said and has been given by the Master Dwalkul in this particular form, so that we could say it here in the West. So if you're ready, take another deep breath. And together, from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And let's do three ohms, deep breath. We're very privileged to have conscious awareness of these things, which really were introduced to the Western world through the great adept, Madame Helena Blavatsky, who was the direct disciple of the Master Kutumi, and worked very closely with the Masters Moria, Kutumi, and Dwalkul, physically and actually living in the home of the master, KH, as he's called, or Kutumi, in the Himalayas. She lived with him and his sister for a period of years where she was physically and actually taught and readied for her function, which was to introduce the ancient wisdom teachings to the West for the first time, and introduced them by transcribing under the direct presence of the Master Kutumi the stanzas of Dzogchen, which are the sacred writings of the Brotherhood, written in Sanzar, which is a pictorial type of script, which can only be translated by someone under the direct ray of one of the masters, which she was. And from that, she was given the task of presenting the wisdom teachings of the East to the West in what became later known as Theosophy. So that is the root of the very first time that some of these teachings were ever brought to the light of awareness in the Western world. And now we're at the point where we're marrying the wisdom of the East, which is largely introspective and meditative, and the wisdom of the West, which is largely action-oriented. It is more of the karma yoga. The East is more of the jnana yoga. So when you have a blending of the action, karma yoga, with wisdom, jnana yoga, and love, bhakti yoga, you have the perfect expression. That is what we're all meant to be. We're to work like karma yogis, where we don't become attached to the fruits of our action. We are to be aware and illumined like a jnani, practice jnana yoga, the yoga of the intellect, and we are to love and serve all, which is the attitude of the bhakti, the bhakti yoga, the bhakti yogi. And so, that being said, I want us to look at tonight discontent, because it is the one thing that, if it's seen and used appropriately, will lead you Godward. It will bring you to God. Why? Because pretty soon you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And you keep trying to relieve yourself of your discontent. So do you find yourself often discontented with the way things are in your life? Are you discontented right now? And why? Who is it that is discontented? Take a look. And know that you can use this discontent as a stepping stone, as a way to transcendence. Can you see your discontent as something that is serving in your onward progression? Can you? Can you see yourself as an expanding field of awareness? Not as a body, but as an expanding field of awareness. You know, isn't it true that most of us spend our lives seeking to calm, appease, or satisfy our discontent? It seems that no matter what comes, when we're in a lower state of consciousness or the ego, it's really not possible to be perfectly content and happy very, very long with any of it. If we're alone, we're lonely. We have to have some distraction. We become discontented, and we go out and try to seek some excitement, some experience. If our experience does not fully satisfy us, we strive to bring about some change. But we change, and still we're not satisfied. still were discontented. So why is it that discontent has such a vitality that continues to arise no matter what we do? There must be some situation, which is very general, but very much alive for discontent to be so general. But everybody, it seems, experiences discontent. And therefore, everyone, if one chooses to look, may see the fundamental causes of discontent. For example, is there anyone that is not bothered by the thought that one day this body is going to drop, he is going to die, even though his philosophy or belief system may somehow prepare him for death? Everyone will say, okay, but please, not at this second. Please, not now. So our discontent when life is threatened is universally known. And another thing, is our thirst for knowledge, is that ever satisfied? Think about it. Everything from the housewife who inquires about the affairs of her friends and her family, to the businessman seeking to know his industry, to the saint thirsting after God. Everyone strives to know more and more, and it seems that no matter how much more we acquire, we never quite experience that perfect knowledge, and thus our discontent with learning will not be eased by further study. And we're even discontented because we can't remember sometimes what we have learned. And thus we try to make permanent records. We keep journals. We do all of these things, trying to hold and to grasp and to be attached to the known. And suppose we're in a state of wonderful happiness. Our surroundings are just right. We're feeling relatively blissful. Our companions are harmonious. And all is well. But just with a small ant bite, or a mosquito bite, or a spider dropping down from the ceiling, and suddenly we jump and shout. So we can't rest until the insect or whatever is brushed off and the pain subsides. So our peace and happiness was seemingly so vast, and yet a little thing like an ant or a mosquito, and it takes flight. So what is it? What can we do? How can we be happy and still worry about one small imperfection? Is it possible? No. We are either at peace and it's 100%, or we're not. And peace is like pregnancy. You know, it's never less than full and 100%. So, laying aside or disregarding any abnormal psychological states, all the activity of human beings, if you analyze it, okay, is aimed at achieving one or all of three goals. Number one, to exist always, to never die. To know all things, always. And to be perfectly happy all the time, always, under all conditions. And anything less than perfect realization of these three objectives will give rise to discontent. So, in short, we have the irrepressible craving to be divine, for perfect being, perfect knowledge, and perfect bliss, which is said to be the eternal nature of God. So this extraordinary craving to be like God, which we cherish at every level of our being, sleep, awake, in partial awakening, all the way to full enlightenment, we have this cherished desire deep within us. Why? This is a reflection into the state of the lower consciousness of Sat Chit Ananda. Sat, eternal existence. Chitta, all-pervasive knowingness. Ananda, that joyous peace and inner stillness of bliss. So, that full and perfect being, awareness, bliss, is the actual and present reality that one who is an avatar, like Sai Baba, like Lord Buddha, like Lord Jesus, like the Ascended Masters, they live in that state. I got to watch it first and up close and personal in my many years of living with and around Sai Baba in India. And I noticed that Sai Baba was fully present with his action. Everything he did bringing the full presence of his attentiveness, his care, his presence with a capital P to bear on even the slightest little actions. I think Eckhart Tolle would call that acting out of presence, out of this beingness, out of the inner stillness that is totally here and now. And it was like that when he talked to you in an interview. You felt like you were the only person in all of existence. Even though he told us one time that he was working with beings throughout the cosmos at the same time he was present with us. And that's one of those mysterious things that we can't quite grasp about an avatar. So Sai Baba told us that our craving for divinity arises within us because divinity is our essential nature, and that only our manifold and changeable impurities of the mind, of the egoic state, prevent us from fully realizing that we are God. That Baba, in fact, is our own divine self objectified, and that we are not different or separate from him. So, the spiritual practice, the spiritual discipline leading to the realization of our essential divinity has been taught by Sai Baba in his divine teachings. And you can all purchase books that Baba has been, that he has either written or that have been transcriptions of his many, many discourses. And he will work with you at the level of your receptivity, of your level of desire to know. We also asked him, why creation? Why all this stuff? Why, if we're divine, do we have to be down here, forget who we are, and go about seemingly as humans? How did this all come about and why? And, there's so many religious points of view and philosophical and scientific. And, there's a controversy even in the educational systems what to teach about, creation. Is it divine creation? Is it evolution? What is it? And how should it be taught? So perhaps, the human mind can truly understand creation. And perhaps it cannot. I think probably it cannot until there's some degree of enlightenment, some degree of integration of the higher self with the lower. But here's what Sai Baba had to say about creation, which I think might be of interest. He said this to us, "See in me yourself, for I see myself in you. When you look into my eyes, you see that you are reflected. When I look into your eyes, I see myself reflected. That is true no matter whose eyes you look into. But know that you are my life. You are my very life. You are my breath. You are my very soul. All of your forms are my forms. All of your names are my names. All of your family are my family. All of your possessions are my possessions. When I love you, I love myself. When you love yourself, you love me. I separated myself by myself so that I may be myself. I separated myself from myself and became all of this, so that I may be myself. I wanted to be myself. That is, Ananda Swarupa, the embodiment of bliss. Prema Swarupa, the embodiment of love. That is what I am and want it to be that. How can I be Ananda Swarupa and Prema Swarupa and give bliss and love? And to whom am I to give bliss? And to whom am I to give love? So I did this. I separated myself from myself and became all of this so that I could love and be loved. And there you have it. To love and be loved. That is why God created everything. So the ancient scriptures say that only God is real. Only God is. And all else is illusion, superimposed on the reality of God. You know, I was meditating on this yesterday, and I raised my hand, and I was watching my shadow against the white wall. And I had the revelation that, oh, I'm in the heart of God now. I've never left the heart of God. And my body appearing in time and space is just the same as that shadow appearing on the wall. I'm not in that shadow. I'm not that shadow. I am the one observing the play of shadows. And no matter where that shadow falls, it doesn't touch me. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't pollute me. It doesn't affect me at all. And so if we can learn to observe our life from the heart of God, from the heart of truth, if we can kick back and stay in that balcony mode of observership, you will realize that if you've ever seen a cyclorama is a semicircle of a white background that often is used in a stage setting. And the actors that appear in the stage cast their shadows on that cyclorama or whatever. Anything can be projected on that. And Sai Baba has likened our forms here as like shadows cast upon the cyclorama or the blank screen of creation by the mind, which acts like a projector. So the whole vision process is a projection of the lower mind or the ego mind on the blank screen of creation. So as an exercise, why not use that as a meditation? Meditate on your shadow and realize that is exactly a perfect analogy of your physical body, your current personality, your current drama and enactment, your current role play on the stage of life. And realize that you are the witnessing awareness, the Satchitananda, that is watching the shadow play. Watch it. Practice it. That will be your yoga. That will be your meditation. That will give you more fruit of realization than sitting and trying to calm your mind for the next 50 years. So use your daily life. Use everything in your life as a stepping stone to God. Use everything. I don't care what it is. It's a meditation. It's a meditation. So through habit, and in this case, ages-long habits and lifetimes, humanity tends to look upon the objects and situations and experiences of the world as being real in themselves. And the mind naturally will always attend to that which it takes to be real. If you look at people, they're always acting out of their state of consciousness. Everyone sees a world of his or her own projection based on what they have decided is real. And they can only see that. They can't see something that they have not already agreed to as being real. That's why some people can see UFOs and somebody standing right next to them can't. That is why someone can look at Sai Baba and see God, and another person will look and see a magician or the Antichrist or something else. You can only see what you have made an agreement with within your own consciousness. And that's why consciousness can't be forcibly expanded. You know, you can't force these things. Everyone matures and develops at their own rate, but the rate is covered, determined by your openness and willingness and desire to have that awakening. So happiness and misery are experiences which the mind, the ego mind, takes to be very real. And these experiences arise from contact with the world, contact through the senses. And because we can feel, taste, smell, sense, interact with these things, that solidifies them in our mind as being, quote, real. So this is the state we're all in, is learning to awaken in the midst of the vividness of our daily life and the experiences, or the vividness of our depression or discontent or whatever is going down in our life. There's a point in which, instead of just taking it as the way things are, you begin to use it as a tool for your own enlightenment. So, have you ever thought of yourself as an expanding field of awareness? And many of you who listen to me are practitioners of soul transcendence or soul travel. And did you ever realize in the midst of that process that what is termed soul travel or soul transcendence is simply being more aware of your inner self as an expanding field of awareness? That's all it is. You're not going anywhere. Where are you going to go? Wherever you go, there you are. So the expanding sometimes inwardly is experienced, and this is my experience. I don't know if everyone has the same, but I have to share my own experience. The expanding sometimes will inwardly be perceived as ever-expanding concentric circles of light that you see at the third eye. And this can, I say can, it doesn't have to, and there's other things that happen. It can indicate a sense of growing and expanding awareness. Each circle, in a way, represents another expansion, like a widening ripple in a pool of water, still water, the effects of one's broadening of consciousness. So always pay attention to any light phenomena. Don't get attached to it. You know, it's not going to stay very long. But these are things that happen when you first start to make that divine connection. Usually you'll see some light. Not everyone will, but sometimes you will. Remember, some of you already come in at a level beyond this. So if you experience something, fine. If you don't, fine. Whatever it is, love it, accept it. Just know that it's exactly what you need, and don't sweat the details. So the circumference of any given entity's field of attention is called the field of service. Service is not a doing, it's a being. It's who and what you are, not what you do. It's where your field of heart's intent is focused. If your intention is to be of service, to be a blessing wherever you go, that is a radiation of attention that we're speaking of. And its limit, where you fall short or stop in that expansion, is called the ring past not. In other words, there is a radiatory arena in which every life form operates. It's its field of operation, impact, and influence. So for the average person yet to awaken beyond the basic survival and maintenance, as far as they're concerned, the field of influence and radiation is relatively small, maybe just, practically speaking, perhaps just a few feet and involving one's immediate family and circle of friends. However, for an awakened person or an initiate, the radiatory aura of influence can extend for miles. Yeah, you're not where your body is parked. You're actually a field of service, which in many cases extends for miles. Really advanced souls will cover a whole city with their aura, or a whole state, or a whole nation. Now, what to say of an avatar, like Sai Baba, for example? An avatar's aura of influence can encompass the entire earth. And I experienced that with Sai Baba. I had a direct experience of where the earth and everything was inside his head, his consciousness, his auric radiation. And it's through this expanded field of awareness that Sai Baba could rightly claim that he was always with us. And the Master says, I am always with you. And we look at the body and we wonder how that can be. Jesus said, Lo, I am with you always. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. How can that be? Because their aura, their field of influence, their consciousness is greatly expanded, and you're inside of it. Haven't you remember in the Bible where it says, we live and move and have our being in God? That's what that means. And that is how a genuine master can be spiritually present at all times with his or her chelas. So we can see how many are actually awaking within humanity right now and expanding their field of service. How is that? By the prevalence of the Internet. By the prevalence of the Internet. Remember, as within, so without, as above, so below. The Internet is now connecting us with the remotest portion of the Earth. And this is the age of air, the age of Aquarius, of connecting through the airwaves and through the etheric and the morphogenic field that Rupert Sheldrake has made a, let's say, a household word out of, at least within the scientific community that chooses to take note. But this is something that Madame Blavatsky mentioned in her books, The Secret Doctrines, Volume 1 and 2, way back in 1878 when those books were first published. All of this was known to the esotericists, but now it's just starting to become integrated into the prevailing scientific paradigm. So we're all part of that. You and I are ancient initiates. We're the disciples. We're the ones who have come from many, many stars, many planets, many realms and dimensions to be part of this expanding illumination, this expanding love, this expanding light throughout all of the areas of worldly life. We're planted and work and live exactly where we're meant to exert our radiation of experience, our self, our aura, our presence. That's the gift. That's the mission. That's the ministry. You are your own message. You are your own field of service. Get that. Know that. And it isn't limited to what you're doing in your house. I mean, you can sit in your home in silence and touch to the farthest that you can possibly extend with your level of consciousness and love. So some of the greatest work is done in the silence. In fact, the more you merge with your Atman, with your monad, with your I Am presence, the less there is a need for outward sound. You'll notice that you're in prayer 24/7. That's what's meant in the Bible when it says to pray without ceasing. Nobody can do that. So what would that mean? It means that your attitude is intercessory prayer all the time, because your intention is to love and serve all of creation. When the ego dies, that's not accurate. When the ego dissolves in the light of your higher awareness, there's no longer any need for any kind of barrier. You transcend what's called the limitation of the karmic field. The karmic field would be under the law of karma and reincarnation, or the call power, the negative force that governs the material universes. And you come under the grace of the Christ, which is unlimited. There's nothing that the grace of Christ cannot do through you. That's why it says in the scriptures, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And why Jesus said to Paul, my grace is sufficient to thee. So when you understand the action of grace, which is the factor of transcendency that lifts you in consciousness, because it transcends the lower states of the ego, it lifts you into that divine soul transcendental state where you live by grace and you're no longer subject to the law of karma. That's why Jesus said, if a man be in me, he be free indeed. And why he also said, to me personally, when I asked him about it, that there's no karma in Christ, which means when you live from the Christ center, which is your own soul awareness, you're focused minimally at the third eye area. But you can't enter the third eye area without going through the corridor of the heart. That's the big secret. If you just go to the third eye area, you'll develop powers, siddhis, clairvoyance, psychic stuff. But that's not going to take you anywhere. That's going to keep you in the realms of illusion where you're tempted to have personal power and personal influence. And you can't go to God through that. That's the ego. That's the spiritual ego, if you could call it that. So it's through the purity of the heart, the humility of the heart, the laid down life before that which is greater than the personal self, that you generate genuine attunement to the Christ center or the soul. And then you go together in that heart coherency of the marriage of the mind and the heart. You go home to the Father, which is that corridor straight up through the top of the crown chakra, where you and the Father become one. Or you merge in what is called monadic consciousness. That's the monad is a fancy name for the spirit that never leaves the heart of God. It's also a fancy name for I am or soham. There's many names depending, but I think you catch my drift. So that's why Jesus said, no man comes unto the Father save by me. He was talking about a state of consciousness, not his body, not his form, not his name. Well, yeah, his name, but not limited to that form is what I'm trying to say. You can't limit that. The Christ is your own self. It's your own self. Why? Well, let's look at it this way. The Father, that's what she's called, the Father, is the living light. The mother is the living love. When you marriage light or truth, let's say truth, the Father is truth, which is the same thing as saying light. When you marriage truth and love, the issue of that merger is light. And the light is the living word, or the Christ that became flesh and dwells in the world. That's what it means in the great invocation when it says, let Christ, or may Christ return to earth. How is the Christ going to return to earth if not through you and me? How? Oh, you're going to have Christ-conscious avatars Christ-conscious teachers, but all of them teach the same thing. They teach love. Every single one of them says, you are divine. Every single one of them says, you are the light of the world. Every one of them says, you are the love of God. Every one of them. There's no difference. I don't care what scripture you look in or what avatar of the Lord you're looking at or what enlightened master you follow. They all teach the same thing if they're teaching the truth. So the only way we can go home to God is by becoming one with God in our sense of self, in our identification. And we're told very clearly God is love. And you'll know the people of God by their love. And that when you live in love, you live in God, and God lives in you as you. And whatever you do at that point is done through the impetus of the Holy Spirit. What is the Holy Spirit? Divine love. The Holy Spirit is the manifestation in your expression of divine love. So where is the Father? The Father is the monad, or the Spirit, the Paramatma, the Supreme One that you look at, that you look towards in that union that occurs in that highest state of consciousness when the heart and the third eye merge in divine union in the center of the skull, and you are liberated out to the top of the crown chakra. And your aura at that point, your influence expands into the universe and keeps expanding at each level as you go beyond the chakras in the body and you enter beyond the chakras into the soul realm. There's no chakras at that level. That's where all differentiation and separation and duality ends, and all forms, I might say. From that plane on upward, you work as a unit of awareness, as a unit individualized when it needs to be, but otherwise in spacious awareness that is everywhere present and all-knowing, all-loving, and immortal. You have vacated the fields of death and limitation. And no matter who you are or what you are, that's your destiny. Everyone, there's no failure possible in this. Everyone is going to awaken and find in highest truth they've never left the heart of God. So we are awakening as a collective humanity to the interconnection and interdependence of all life forms, first on Earth, and next our awareness will expand out amongst our neighbors of other worlds and dimensions, which are so highly evolved, they don't want anything to do with our ego. So if we want to meet Ashtar or some of those very, very highly evolved ultra-terrestrial lords of light, you're going to have to jettison all selfishness, greed, and small-mindedness. All of that negative stuff has got to be jettisoned, or rather than jettisoned, illumined and transmuted through your conscious awakening within that moment of whatever it is the ego's trying to lay forth as your reality. You have to awaken when the ego's upon you, and the awareness then dissolves it. As you look at it, it begins to dissipate. Because the ego cannot be seen by the sight of the soul without its beginning to dissolve. That's why the ego always tries to keep you away from truth. It doesn't want to be dissolved. So, So when you look at it directly, it begins to disintegrate. So, we will ultimately begin to progress from the technology of the left brain or the ego mind to the technology of the heart, which HeartMath as an institute is already doing, and from that, we will eventually move beyond technology in sense of mechanisms of any sort or gadgets to where we have a technology of pure light. And right now, humanity is receiving upgrades and downloads of this higher consciousness, these higher meta-programs, and many people are initiating into these superhuman states right now as we speak. Some of you are in specific integration of these higher programs and have been for some time. At the time of the Wesak is the time, and the three linked festivals actually of Easter, Wesak, and the Christ full moon in June, or the Festival of Humanity as it's also called. These are the time when you go through major, major expansions of your consciousness. And so some of your current discomfort, discontent, your need to rest, sleep, turn off and be, are simply part and parcel of your assimilation of these energies. This need not be difficult if you can just flow with it, accept it without resistance. Resistance appears as fear, worry, concern, anxiety, fighting, you know, to stop the process. And usually the one that's doing that is the lower self or the basic self, which fears transformation, of course, because the body is its home. So I just wanted to point that out because several of the people I'm working with are going through that right now. And I always encourage them to just be present with it and trust God, because God has it handled and there's nothing at all for you to fear. So let's go out chanting, Anai Hu. And take a deep breath just before you do that, okay? Ready? Deep breath. Anai Hu. Anai Hu. May all the beings of all the worlds be happy, blissful, and at peace. Adonai.